In a world brimming with complexity, few creatures embody harmony like the honeybee. With tireless precision, she dances from bloom to bloom, each motion guided by millennia upon millennia of instinct, each act in service to the whole. And then there are the beekeepers, watchful stewards of this ancient symbiosis. Part agri-scientist, part poet, they move along their hives with the efficiency of Moe, Larry, and Curly, tending to the bees' needs as best they can comprehend, and with the infrequency of a waterfall in the Sahara, sometimes running off, flapping and flailing like a penguin on a hot sidewalk. This is their journey.
Welcome, welcome to Bee Love Beekeeping, presented by our best friends over at Man Lake. Today, we're going across the pond to Scotland to have a fun discussion with a natural beekeeper who's originally from Budapest. That's a combination. We discuss everything from propolis tinctures to bee nutrition to dealing with bee death, times to smoke your bees and times to smoke yourself, and a whole ton more. And in our invention mention segment, we'll be trying on Man Lake's new ventilated bee suit and putting it to the test. It's a full program, so let's jump right in. I'd like to welcome today our very, very special guest, Tita Kish. How are you this morning?
Hello, Eric. I'm very well. Thank you very much for inviting me. I'm very happy to be here.
All right. I say good morning, but I know it's evening for you, and I appreciate you being here. Tell us where you are right now and a little of your background. Where do you come from?
So I live in Scotland, in southwest Scotland to be exact, very close to the sea. Our nearest big town is Glasgow. And our little location is special because we are on an elevation of about 200 meters above sea level. And as we are very close to the sea and essentially to the Atlantic Ocean, we see some interesting weather here. So it's a lovely area and I am absolutely in love with Scotland, but probably you can all pick up that my accent is not really native to Scotland.
You don't sound like you grew up in Scotland.
No. I grew up in Eastern Europe in a country called Hungary, and I was born in Budapest. So my mother tongue is Hungarian. And even though I spent over 10 years in the UK, you still can hear this Eastern European root.
That's okay. Your English is very good. And I've been to Budapest, and a lovely city. Beautiful buildings, bridges right on the river right there, and just a lovely place. We really enjoyed ourselves. And a lot of history.
Yes, over 1,000 years. So we've been in the Carpathian Basin. My country is famous for agriculture. We do a lot of beekeeping in Hungary, but I am not coming from a beekeeper tradition. Also, it's not entirely sure because my grandma said that my grandfather's grandfather used to keep bees. So I do have some beekeeping history there, but none of my immediate family keeps bees.
I think you picked up some genetics.
Yeah.
It was passed down to you because from our earlier discussion, it seems to have come to you very naturally and something that you automatically love. And I think some of that DNA gets passed down. But I'm going to just throw a little bit out there for our listeners as one of the things that got me interested in speaking with you And looking at your Instagram profile and stuff, is I don't even know how to explain this, because you're a beekeeper and a historian and a death doula, and I don't even know what else. Fill in some other ands.
Well, we all know that, you know, honeybees are so different, and they do so many different roles in their life, in a short amount of lifetime. And I am a little bit like them in that sense, because, yeah, I've done so many things. Before beekeeping, we run a restaurant and catering business with my chef husband. And then the pandemic happened, and we kind of had to reimagine our life and lifestyle, and we just wanted to get out from hospitality and, you know, do something meaningful in with our lives. And my husband started to work in forestry industry, so he's planting trees across UK, and I learned beekeeping. So it's been 5 years with the bees now. 1 year with my mentor, who we met on Facebook. He just recently passed away, so I'm still a bit tender over this loss, because I just feel like I didn't get enough time with him. We met when he was turning 81, and he needed some help with his bees. He is a generational beekeeper. His father and grandfather used to keep bees, and he still kept bees, but then he ended up in a wheelchair with reduced mobility. After a very short season that we spent together, I ended up having his hives. He gifted me a couple of his hives, and that's how I became very quickly a beekeeper. And, you know, I felt it like I'm not ready, but the bees had other plans.
And none of us are an expert after 4 or 5 or 10 or 20 years of beekeeping, but that's okay. We all have something to learn from each other. And one of the things that I love the best is just your attitude about bees. It's all over what this podcast is about, which is about the love of bees and the fun and the joy that can come from beekeeping and being around bees. So I'd like to jump into that aspect of it, but just one quick thing I wanted to fill in first. You mentioned that you're by the Atlantic Ocean.
Yes.
And I believe your word was that makes the weather interesting or something like that. Yeah. Tell us what that means. Does that mean you get a ton of rain or ocean breezes? And because weather so much affects our beekeeping and our bees. So give me a little background on that.
Oh, where to start? You know, in the UK, weather is always amongst the top topics. We talk about it very regularly over here because it changes so quickly. So in a day, sometimes we see 4 seasons. And here where I live, it is so true more intensely. We are one of the wettest part of the UK, so we see a crazy amount of rainfall. And we also quite close to the Arctic, so we can actually see some Arctic storms. Not often, but recent years, I have to say, it happened more frequently than before, and like following the Met Office report. So the weather is definitely getting a bit stranger and maybe more unpredictable. Yes, it makes beekeeping quite challenging in the sense that you constantly have to be prepared for anything. Big storms, big winds that are coming from the ocean. I mean, I constantly keep blocks of things on the hives so that it doesn't get blown off. Around February, we had another big storm. The whole village were like upside down, you know, garden, fence, beans, everything was blown all over around. So, you know, you just never know what to get here. We can see snow, we can see ice, but also we can see heat waves. We just had a week of really warm weather. it just makes me appreciate the bees even more, if it makes sense, because, you know, they go out in weathers that I wouldn't. And I think it's down to the fact that I have mainly dark bees. You know, these are the native genetics to Scotland and to Western Europe, and they evolved in ways that they can just cope with big winds and rain. They are much fluffier than the Italian breed and, you know, the ones that you generally see.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about the breed. Does it have a name?
Yes, so it's Apis mellifera mellifera, the Western European dark bee. And they have been around since the Ice Age. So they evolved in weathers that are strange and cold and wet, and, you know, they've been around when mammoths roamed the continent, and they have some really amazing adaptability. So their wings is a bit longer, so they can fly in strong winds. I find it incredible. I mean, I just filmed them. We had a big storm. We had weather warning out by the Met Office, so we were not really going anywhere. But I was checking on the bees, and some foragers were out and about. You know, we didn't go out because it was so dangerous to be out on the road instead of flying debris, but that didn't stop the bees. They were still bringing in pollen.
That's crazy. We had a big wind come through on Saturday afternoon where I live, and I happened to be out with the bees when it did. It was just a storm front coming through. And wow, I mean, they hunkered down as fast as they could. We had some 55-mile-an-hour gusts, and they can't fly in that. At least most bees can't. I don't think yours can either, probably. But what comes up, what that makes me think of what you were just talking about, is we're always talking about how beekeeping is local. And that's primarily because our weather is so local and is different everywhere. And so we talk about different things that we can do. We can put up windbreaks. We can put up shade if it's in a place that's super hot, or insulation in a place where it's super cold. But we don't very often talk about bee genetics. And I think that's because most of us don't go, okay, well, here's my climate, so I need XYZ kind of bee, and I know where to get it. And that's really cool that you do, and that those are native to that area anyway, which totally makes sense. And if we sent you some bees that were raised in Houston, Texas, they'd probably just die where you are, I would guess, because they're just not climatized to it. I could be wrong, but I think that's pretty cool. What else do you find that in that kind of weather that you can help the bees with?
One of the biggest difference that I do in my apiary is that I completely phased out wooden hives. I mean, I still have two, but I'm planning to move them into a polyester hive, which just makes me a bit, you know, natural beekeepers, we are not generally say that they use plastic in the bees. I don't put plastic in the hive, but these polyester hives have been absolutely amazing. You know, they are thick, they are well insulated, they are lightweight, they are easy to clean. They keep the bees mold-free. Mold is a big issue here, you know, all that rain and moisture. It's really hard to keep mold out from the hives, but these polyester hives do that job. And they are great in really cold weather too. So apparently the side of these polyhives mimic 15 centimeter thickness of wood.
That's what, 4 or 5 inches thick, something like that.
Yeah, so like, you know, like a real trunk would
yeah,
be.
Yeah, like a tree.
Because that's also something we don't often think about as beekeepers, that, yeah, we are using these wooden boxes, but they are not exact replicas of wooden trunks, what bees genuinely, you know, choose when they live in the wild. So they're not going to be as insulated as a tree trunk would be.
If you're a beekeeper like me, we're getting into that favorite time of year, honey harvest. But it can be a lot of work. That's where Mad Lake comes in. They have everything you need to make the job easier, cleaner, and more efficient. Removal aids, refractometers, uncapping tools, extractors, tanks, wax melters, even the jars and labels. Plus, they have free shipping on glass containers. Whether you're a hobbyist with two hives or a full-blown commercial operation, Man Lake has it all. And don't forget your discount code, MLBLOVE10. It's in the show notes for $10 off your first $100 purchase.
So in climates like my climate, it can become a serious issue straight away. As I said, I did have some wooden hives through the years, and yeah, they just got really moldy and weathered in just like a season. So, you know, that's something that can stress the bees. You know, if they constantly have to battle mold issue on top of all the other things that they have to battle, you know, it just weakens the colony overall. So I kind of had to put down my philosophy in that sense about plastic and that how we should not really use plastic around our bees if we are following the natural beekeeping methods. But I think what you are wrapping your bees into, that doesn't really matter in that sense, that, you know, like putting plastic within the hive. If it protects the bees and keeps them healthier and safer, then put them in there. And it worked really well.
And from a practical beekeeper kind of standpoint, all that rain can bring a lot of rot, and those hives can just fall apart pretty quickly too. Do you find in those poly hives that they put a lot of propolis in the inside?
It depends on the hive. You know, sometimes some hive produces a lot of propolis and you see hives that they barely, so it really depends on the hive. There is always some propolis because I like to put the boxes into hot water and soda crystal, you know, to sanitize it. And, you know, it always changes the color. And I love working with propolis, so I don't... Is it why you are asking? Sorry, Eric. Is it a good thing, you think?
It just seems like if you're concerned with the plastic or polypropylene, if they were to put a layer of propolis over it, that would kind of shield them from it. But a lot of those that I've seen, they're so slick or smooth inside that the bees don't tend to propolize them. They tend to propolize rough things.
Yeah.
Like you've probably seen some of the wood hive bodies where they've purposely roughed up the interior, and they find the bees put a lot of propolis then inside, which of course we know is really good for them and sort of an antibiotic or antibacterial for them.
So they do tend to put a lot of propolis on the frames and some on the side, but what I noticed that they don't really spend too much time on the edges, like what they would do in a wooden box. I don't know if it's because they're constantly trying to fix the wooden box from rotting. I mean, as I say, rotting was always an issue in our apiary. Yes, I'm very grateful that it's gone away.
Part of it is they're trying to fill the gaps.
Yeah.
Especially if it's windy, if there's any little gaps between boxes or crack in a box, they love to propolize that to fill it up and make it one big secure cavity. A few minutes ago, you used the term natural beekeeping. Tell us what that means to you.
Natural beekeeping for me is about a lot of listening and observing and less control. So when I was doing my apprenticing with my mentor, Bob, pretty soon I could see that I personally will struggle to carry out sometimes such invasive looking things with the bees. You know, I could just see that as me, when I'm alone there with the bees without Bob, I will not be able to cool drones or things like that. And I even said it to my husband at the time that I just don't think I will be able to do this, Craig. And he was like, well, you will have to. That will be your job. I said, no. And that's when I sat down in the computer and, you know, started to look into that. What are my options? I mean, Bob was the sweetest, kindest soul. He loved his bees, but he also didn't shed a tear if he squashed a bee. You know, I did. I was there and I slowed him down so many times. And, you know, he just said that it's a part of it. You know, you, of course, you're going to squash some bees, but you sometimes squash more bees when you are trying to save one. So you just have to kind of. And I know he was right, but I also knew that I had to find my own way, that, you know, I am comfortable to show up for the bees. And as I say, the internet is so magical. With very little research, I found beekeepers who do things differently. I actually enrolled to an online natural beekeeping course that was designed for women. So I found myself in a very nurturing community of female beekeepers, experienced beekeepers, who aren't afraid to go against the flow and, you know, do things differently. I really like that. And I really liked how we've been introduced straight away to the bee tea. You know, instead of giving chemicals to the bees, we work with herbs. It's such an, I don't know how you say it, maybe it's because I am a woman in that sense. You know, I love working with plants and flowers, and the fact that I can make something for the bees from my own garden, it's just such a nice feeling, you know. I'm making an effort with my own hand to nourish and support the bees. You know, that's something I can do for them. I think when we stop for a second, because we all love bees, right? That's why we keep them. We love to be around them. And so many times I think we just get into this autopilot mode because we learn this way. And, you know, often when you are just like in an autopilot, you don't really think, you just want to like crack on because you have experience and you know what you do. But in natural beekeeping, we try to let that go. This is the hardest, you know, like not stepping in.
Not being in control.
Yes. Yes. I think even, well, in my own experience this summer, one of my hive had really high varroa count. So I was worried. You know, I was keeping a close eye on them. I was putting the tray under the hive every other, every 4 or 5 days. I was checking. And I made the tea. But I didn't make it when the numbers were high. I thought I will wait, because even this herbal tea is something that other bees don't receive. You know, the native bees are not receiving that. The bumblebees, the wasps, they don't get any tea from anyone. So it is also a kind of treatment if you think about it. I was waiting and I kind of allowed myself to feel worried because the bees didn't look stressed. You know, their brood looked okay. There's lots of them, lots of bees bringing pollen in. You know, it's just another day in the beehive. But for me, it was hard to see. But now, when did I do my last count? Was it last? I think the last time we spoke. And it started to go down. So it is less than, it peaked and it's gone down a little bit. And I'm hoping that by September it will go more. So sometimes the bees need time and they forever show me that, you know, they know what they do.
Tell me about this tea that you're talking about. What do you mean you make a tea for them?
So it's a herbal honey tea that's been created by a German natural beekeeper, Günther Hoek. I hope I pronounced his name correctly. He is quite a renowned natural beekeeper in Europe. So if anybody types his name into Google, you're gonna find him. And we've been given this recipe in this natural beekeeping course. And I have to say that when I made it, my bees didn't want it. They didn't touch it. I get all offended because I am not a great cook, but I can make a tea. You know, I was like, I can make some tea. Come on. The downside with this tea is that, you know, it can ferment because you add water and herbs into raw honey. So, of course, it's going to start ferment. And I made a portion. I had to throw it away because the bees didn't touch it. I made another one. They left it again. So that's when my chef husband came to help and check the recipe. And he said, it might work for others. It's not like that, whatever you do, but I know how you could make this recipe better. I mean, more desirable for the bees, because this original recipe doesn't include sugar syrup. You know, in natural beekeeping, we are not giving sugar syrup to the bees. We only give them raw honey. But my husband kind of explained that I have to stop thinking about sugar syrup as something evil in this scenario, because sugar syrup can make the tea last longer. You know, it can stop the fermentation process. So I have to think about it as a substance that I need to prevent spoilage in my tea. So we started to add equal amount of sugar syrup to the raw honey and to the tea, to this watery substance, and the bees absolutely loved it. So ever since, we've been using it this way, but we're still using the same herbs that is written down in the original recipe. And last year was special because that when I started to add mushroom extract to this tea, following Paul Stamets' research. I don't know if you heard what he's been doing on his bees and with his mushrooms. It's also on the internet. Check it out. It's amazing. It's very promising. So on that note, I started to get human-grade mushroom extract. And with the help of my chef husband, we managed to make that mushroom powder suitable to go into the tea so that the bees can drink that. So it's like, yeah, it has 10 different herbs, mushrooms, and I also add Hive Alive, you know, these algae syrup things as a bonus.
Yeah, I'm familiar with it.
So this is how you make your sugar syrup into the next level, when it's not just the sugar syrup, it's not just something that's going to keep the bees alive from starvation. You know, it's something that they will really enjoy eating because it's full with honey, which is their food. It's full with nutrition that the bees need. And then you have all these herbs that we are all familiar and we are not allowed to call them anything. But these are the herbs that our ancestors would have been keeping in their garden, right? These are plants that the bees are familiar with and forage on. And these are herbs that are familiar for us humans because we've been using them for certain things through history.
Can we share the recipe?
Yes. The recipe is on my Ko-fi page, so I can send a link.
We'll stick a link in the show notes. And you ask a small donation for that too, and I don't have a problem with that. This is so funny because I'm just picturing, first of all, you're trying to throw a tea party with the bees, right? So I'm imagining they're little teacups. And then you've got your husband, the chef, making it taste better for them. And then you've got some kind of Mary Poppins going on with a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down for them.
This is a tonic, a herbal tonic for the,
yes,
for the bees.
But it's part of your IPM. So your belief is, I can't really do anything to kill the mites. I'm going to make the bees as strong, as healthy as possible, and they'll take care of it. Am I reading that right?
Yes, you know, the mites are here. You can't keep them out from the hives. They are in the hives. We like it or not, they going to get into your bees' hives. It's sad, it's what it is, but that's our reality.
Hey, if you're worried about whether a new bee suit will actually keep you safe from being stung, might as well let someone else try it first, right? Just kidding, of course. Actually, I was doing my son Will a favor recently, letting him be the first one to wear my new Manlake vented suit on a hot day that the bees were going to be upset, while I wore something much less impressive.
Have the new Manlake bee suit on today. We're headed out to harvest some honey. Last time we were doing this last year, I had the very first bee suit that he owned on. It had mice holes in it, duct taped. It was hot. Oh my gosh, I was so sweaty coming out of it. The veil, I had to wear a hat under it so it wasn't falling down on my eyes and on my face. This Manlake suit is amazing. This is an extra large. I don't know, 5'10", so I'm not the tallest, but it covers the ankles well. It's nice and versatile, super breathable, lightweight. It's really amazing. I'm excited to go put it to the test, see what it's got.
Since harvest day, I've also worn the suit a few times and can tell you it is super well made. If you're beekeeping in warm weather and you've never had a ventilated suit, oh my gosh, you don't know what you're missing. And I've never seen one quite like this. The designers put a layer of rubberized netting between two layers of finely woven mesh. And I absolutely love the clear view veil. No wrinkles, no sagging. I can literally see the bees better. I wear a size large in most clothes, but usually get an XL in bee suits just because I like them to be a little oversized. I would say that an XL is plenty big. In fact, I may size down to a large next time around. There are beekeeping days where I only wear a jacket or veil, but if I were a new beekeeper, had aggressive bees, or just knew that that particular day they were going to be angry, this is the max protection, max ventilation suit I'm putting on, period.
But I do believe that if we give space to the bees, they will find ways to cope with it. Because the native species of Asia, where this mite is originated from, the Apis carana, the Chinese honeybee, they evolved together. And this bee species is very successful at keeping the mite count in check. You know, it shows that the species itself can learn coping mechanism. But if we constantly intervening and propping them up with these chemicals, we are taking away the option for them to naturally find ways. And, you know, I know it means that, and maybe that's how we can actually tie in my death doula thing, that, you know, we don't like, as our modern society, we are very uncomfortable with the concept of death and dying. You know, it's a human problem. But the bees are not scared to die. You know, they reborn so fast. You know, they reproduce really fast. And if we want Darwinian evolution to continue to take place in the bees' life, we have to let the weak colonies die. And it sounds really hard and harsh, and it's really difficult watching bees perish. I do get that. But we also have to give them space and honor their dying. Because in the long term, in the bigger picture, that will help the bees, the strong to thrive and take over the place of the weak.
So let me make sure I understand. So you believe in natural selection, and even though you're a natural beekeeper, you do believe in IPM, in some kind of intervention, just with natural types of substances, right? Versus harsh chemicals.
Yeah.
Because I think everybody out there is trying to find their way through this maze. Not only what they're comfortable with, but what will work for their bees. And your bees are different than my bees, and mm-hmm. somebody in somewhere else, their bees are different than that. And so it's part of the journey. It's part of what we need to figure out, experiment with. hopefully do it wisely. But I don't think natural beekeeping ever means just stand back and do nothing.
Yes, I think that's a misconception that we think that's what it is, when it's not. You know, I am around my bees a lot. I spend hours with them. I make the tea for them, you know, so I made so much teas in these last 3 years. It's unbelievable. I think last year I added up and it was over 50 liters in these months. And, you know, that's not nothing. As bee tenders, of course, we want to be there and support our bees wherever we can. But we also have to, you know, to realize that there is a point when you just kind of have to let go. And I think that's the scary thing for us. And we don't want our bees die, but sometimes they have to die. Sadly, that's the sad part. I had my first loss this year. After 3 years of beekeeping this spring, I lost a hive. And it was not down to Varroa. It was a late swarm. They swarmed early August. They didn't really build out as much. And they just didn't come out from the winter. And I had the chance to give them a new queen. And I decided not to. Because that swarm was too weak to overwinter, even with my help. You know, they received help. I gave them honey from other colonies, and I gave them the tea, and they did not manage. In my eye, that was the sign that they are not suitable for my Scottish landscape. So I was there when they died. It was really deep. I had the queen in my hand. There was still like a handful of bees and they were still tending to her. And you know, in a couple of days, they all died. And it was very sad. I was crying. I was, you know, it was very emotional. But in the same way, as a death doula, whose job is to teach about death, you know, it was an honor to witness that I could actually be there, support that handful of bees with my presence, with my warmth. You know, I moved them into a small hive on a, you know, I cleared out all the dead, because there was a lot of like dead bees under, you know, it looked so sad. So I moved these survivor bees into a little hive on one comb so that, you know, they had a nice last couple of days in a clean space. And yeah, it was very sad, but I also know that it was the right thing to do. I didn't see the point of getting them an artificial queen from somewhere that are not born on my little hill with my weird strange weather. You know, like, I could get another queen, but what if they would perish again next season?
Yeah. So, but you did it with respect. Right.
Yeah.
And honor for them. Wow.
It was really moving. And bees, even when they die, they teach us and show us something.
I know the commercial beekeepers listening are just thinking we're a little bit crazy. But for those of us that do beekeeping on a smaller scale, we can take that time and we can invest that emotion. And that's an okay thing. Yeah. Do you use smoke?
I do use smoke, but that's for my own benefit rather than the bees. I believe that whenever I go to the bees, I put on my suit and I handle that, as you know, that this is how I start my ceremony with the bees. So the suit and the smoker puts me into that mental space that I am coming into the apiary. It's time to forget about my shopping list, that and what we're going to eat tonight. And so this is now me suiting up for the bees. So I use herbs from my garden and sticks and pine cones from the forest that we have just nearby. And I start to smoke myself, cleanse my aura. You know, I'm walking in with my intention to see the bees and learn from them. And I also use the smoke when I close the hive, because I don't like to squash bees, and that's the only thing that makes them go away from these edges. I didn't find any other way, so if you have any method to keep them away from the edges, please tell me, because it was just the smoke that I can move them away.
Just the wet towel method, which I've recently heard about.
Okay. I
take a towel, like a beach towel, get it all wet, wring it out, and then as soon as you take the lid off your hive, you put this wet towel on top. And the bees tend to go down a little bit like they do with smoke. And then you just peel back like a frame at a time that you're going to work on and then cover it back up.
That's so interesting.
Something worth trying. I had not heard of that before until a couple of new friends of mine from Denmark that were on the show recently. They were saying that that's how they do it. They've gotten away from using smoke by doing that. Anyway, I'm going to try it, see how it works.
Because I do use like a cotton, well, it's more of like a tea towel that I cover the hive when I am inspecting frames, so that, you know, the whole hive is not exposed to the light and so. But I never heard of the making it wet would actually make them go down, so I will try that.
So you're halfway doing it, so just get it a little bit wet, not dripping. You don't want to get the bees wet. So
yeah.
That's why you wring it out, so it's just damp, and probably it makes it just a little bit cooler, too. I don't know if that's why they're moving down or something else, but interesting idea. So lastly, I wanted to ask you about, have you gotten into the medicinal uses of honeybees and their products yet?
You mean beyond honey?
For yourself. Have you used honey or propolis or bee venom or something else for your own health?
Yes. So I'm a big advocate for raw honey. I eat it every day with intention. I put it in my fruit smoothie, you know. Yes, I love it. I know beekeepers who don't. I don't know if you ever met beekeepers who don't like honey. I actually know a couple. Yes. I love honey. And the other thing I really just got into this year is making propolis tincture. So, you know, the propolis that I scrape off from the frames, I collected them in these past years, and finally I had enough to mix it with alcohol. It's like a high-grade alcohol. It's from my village. We do very strong alcohol in Hungary. I don't know if you had the chance to taste any of them when you were visiting. We have some really strong alcohol in Hungary. One of them is called pálinka, which is like a fruit schnapps, essentially. But when they made in villages at home, they are very strong, like over 70%. So anyway, we've been gifted a bottle from our village, and we knew that we will not be able to drink it ever. So I put the propolis into. Again, my husband helped to work out the measures, but it is just getting ready. So you need to mix it and then shake the bottle every day while the propolis and the alcohol dissolves. And I think you're going to get a really nice tincture in about 3-4 weeks. And we all know propolis is a wonderful thing to have at home.
How much propolis do you use per alcohol? Is it like 2-to-1, 2 times alcohol to 1 propolis or something along those lines?
What was the measure? I think we had about 50 gram of propolis, and we infused it with about 200 milli alcohol.
And then how do you like to use it? For sore throats and things like that?
Anytime you feel a bit off, I would. And it's also great for if you have any cuts, you know, you want to sterilize, heal something on your skin. And anytime you feel a bit off, you have a cold, recovering from something, couple of drops under the tongue. But I also heard that actually the most effective way of using propolis is actually breathing it, so inhaling it to your lungs, and that's where it gets the best absorption from your body. But tincture will work too. But if you have the chance to just sniff it, because I keep it because it just smells lovely.
You just breathe it.
Mm-hmm. So I try to have a sniff before I go to sleep and when I wake up.
Speaking of that, if you've never done this, and I'm just talking to people out there, if you've never taken off the lid of a hive, and before you do anything, just kind of bend down and take a nice breath and just smell it. Mm-hmm. It can be a great experience.
It is.
And sounds like a healthy one, too, from what you're saying.
Even if you walk into the apiary without opening them on a nice, warm, sunny day, you do have that sweet honey scent in the air, I think. It's just so warm and lovely, and you just feel home instantly.
Yeah, someone told me recently that the best smell there is in the world, the most like heaven, is in their honey house when they're processing honey.
Yeah, I completely agree with that.
Well, we can't give medical advice on this show, and anything we talk about is not medical advice. We are not doctors, but it's fun to experiment with some of this. We've talked about some other apitherapy things previously on the show. I had an experience with something just recently. I got a burn on my hand just taking something out of the oven. I had read and talked to someone about the medicinal uses of honey for burns, and I thought, I'm just going to try it. And I painted a little honey on this thing, put a Band-Aid on it to keep the honey on it, shocked at how fast it healed.
It's amazing.
I could not believe it. It was a bad burn, and it healed so fast. It was crazy.
Well, we healed some burn with it when we were just down in...
Really?
Yeah. So we had raw honey from the island where we stayed, and well, we got bad sunburned. We were, even though we weren't out in the heat, you know, we just, yeah, we got our face and shoulders. And I was telling my husband that we have this honey now, and it will work. It will work. So we kept putting it on us, and we never peeled at all. You know, it just healed it.
I don't know how you do it on a big area, though, because you're all sticky now.
Yeah, you're going to get very sticky, so just be prepared. You have to have a towel and put your hairs up if you have long hair. You only need 15-20 minutes, and then you can go to shower. This is what we did.
Oh,
15-20 minutes, just sitting still and trying not to make your furniture all covered in honey. But it does work. And we actually, I have to tell you this as well. Last year, my cat, Gimli, he came home with a big scar just under the ear. It looked awful. It was oozing. It smelled. So I was waiting for an appointment from the vet. But in the meantime, I was like, I'm going to put some honey on it. And I had some chamomile from the garden. So my granny said that just put honey on it and wipe it with chamomile water. And in 2 days, the cat healed. It looked absolutely disgusting, that thing. You know, it was, oh. And yes, 2 days later, it all closed up. All the stuff came out from it. And that was solely down to raw honey from the bees and some chamomile from the garden. We didn't need to go to the vet. He did say that if it doesn't fully close in 3-4 days, I will need to take Gimli in. But it fully closed the wound.
You just saved a couple of $100 on a vet bill, too.
Yeah.
Nice job. All right, we are totally running out of time. Do you have a wild and crazy beekeeping story for us?
I did have a swarm this year. It was very shocking. You know, swarm usually happens, this is what is in the book at least, that it happens on a nice sunny day when the weather is just right. They're not with these dark bees, you know, they can just go in storm. But this hive, they swarmed on a day that was cold, it was cloudy, and it was big wind, and they got scattered all over my garden fence. It took me about 5 hours to collect them and hive them. And they anyway just flew out and gone back home, you know, to the original hive that they came out from. And I was like, well, that was a wasted 5 hours that I will never get back, you know, because they will just swarm again. But anyway, there were still bees all over that hive. So I kept bending down and picking up the bees. And suddenly, when what I picked up was the queen herself. So there was this queen bee in my hand who got lost and separated from her bees. So I guess that's why the bees decided to go back home anyway. So I reunited them after like a couple of hours, and I put the queen bee back to the original hive, and the bees were so delighted. You know, you could just hear the sound of the hive changed. So it made my wasted afternoon not wasted. You know, I still managed to save the queen. So that was quite cool.
That's fun. And by the way, if you want to learn more about swarming behavior, we recently had Tom Seeley on the show. Episodes 232 and 233, they are very well worth listening to, as he knows more than anybody on this planet about swarming behavior. All right. Any last words you can teach us today, Tita, and then we'll let you go.
I just want to say that thank you for everyone who keeps bees and loves the bees and, you know, willing to listen them. I think that's cool.
All right. Thanks a ton. Have a great afternoon in Scotland, and I need your husband to make me a meal sometime.
Okay. I think he will be very happy to do that. Thank you very much for having me, Eric.
Thanks for joining us on Bee Love Beekeeping, presented by Man Lake. If you like this content, I hope you'll share it with a friend, follow and subscribe to this podcast, and even sign up for our newsletter at BeeLoveBeekeeping.com. Also, just a shout out to Vita Bee Health for their support. We appreciate them. Vita's Varroa Control range of products includes Apistan, Apigard, and now Varroxan, extended release oxalic acid strips. Thanks, guys. And remember, if you're not just in it for the honey or the money, you're in it for the love. See you next week.